You're listening to Nocturne. I'm Vanessa Lowe.
What's his name?
Banksy.
Banksy, that's what I thought. Hi,
yeah,
Banksy.
He's able to stick his tongue in your mouth.
Every once in a while, I do an interview in my home office. And when I do that, my dog, Banksy, really wants to be in the room.
You bet.
Somehow I always forget that it's not a great idea, for many reasons, but mostly that he doesn't sit still and he makes silly noises.
You stay.
Oh, yeah, okay. This is the fun game, huh? We like games.
I don't do a lot of interviews here just for this reason.
Here's a time I forgot, which led me to get a little flustered, which was kind of perfect because I was with someone who knew just what to do.
I'm not usually this discombobulated.
That's all right. Do you want to take a moment to just sit and breathe? And
yes.
Let's do the thing. How about that?
That's a really good idea.
Shall I guide us in a moment of mindfulness?
You want to?
Yeah.
Can I record it?
Sure.
Okay.
Just taking a moment to connect into the body and to release everything that's happened this morning to this point. And taking some slow, full, deeper breaths. My name's Adam Barris. And I'm very fascinated, passionate about, and deeply immersed in body, mind, spirit transformation. My work in the world is doing somatic work, transformational nervous system, trauma healing, and grew up in a family. My father's a meditation teacher. My dad, James Barris, is a teacher at Spirit Rock, as well as my mom. They teach together, Jane Barris. So I grew up in this kind of line of personal growth work and mindfulness, and in my own way just became more and more fascinated about, like, what is transformation? How does it happen? And how can I experience the real deal transformation? Whatever there is, whatever we know about evolving, growing for greater joy, well-being, freedom, love, happiness. I'm interested, and I want to know, and I want to share that with the world.
Just for some background, in case you don't know, Spirit Rock is a well-respected meditation center in Marin County, just north of San Francisco. Adam's dad, James, was one of the founders.
I was having nightmares when I was about 7 years old, and so he started doing breathing, basic, simple mindfulness meditation with me when I was about seven. So that was kind of the beginning.
Adam did his first meditation retreat when he was 15 years old.
So I began doing mindfulness, Vipassana, Theravada retreats at Spirit Rock and IMS.
IMS is the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts, founded by some of the same teachers who started Spirit Rock.
And that was a real good foundation for me in learning how to sit and breathe and watch my mind and be present in my body.
While watching his mind and becoming present in his body, Adam began to become aware of something unsettling.
At the beginning of my journey as a meditator, I was very, very uncomfortable in my body. Even though I had great parents and a pretty good upbringing, there were levels of myself where I felt locked down. I had a hard time just naturally breathing, just the way that my body was kind of organized inside. It was kind of like I was wearing a sweater that was too small on the inside of my skin suit. And I didn't necessarily have language to describe what was going on for me. I just knew that I didn't feel super comfortable inside.
Adam's awareness of this inner discomfort led him to study massage and healing somatic work and fueled his passion to go deeper into meditation. And as is often the case, Adam branched off from his parents' teachings to explore what uniquely spoke to him.
At some point, I started to feel like there's certain aspects, there's something that's not fully connecting with me here. And so For about 6 years, I studied intensively with a Western teacher named Dr. Reggie Ray, and he was training the people in his community around doing solitary retreats. We would practice together on retreat, but the idea is that you're becoming more and more self-sufficient as a practitioner. You're really learning how to, as he would say, hold your own experience. So I started by doing solitary retreats, daytime retreats. I started with, I think it was 10 days, and then ended up doing a 3-week solitary retreat, which was very powerful.
Around this time, Adam heard a podcast where his teacher was being interviewed and talking about something called darkness retreats.
And the way that he was speaking about darkness retreats captured my attention. And it drew me in, and I felt this riveting tingles on my spine feeling.
For many people, the idea of being awake in darkness for any significant length of time creates instant discomfort. Adam leaned the other way.
Something about darkness has always felt comforting or interesting to me. I've always loved the night and had a strong connection to kind of the mysterious aspects. And also, I tend to stay up later, and that's kind of been a proclivity in my life.
Adam was drawn not only to the aspect of practicing in darkness, but he was also compelled by the idea of going farther than he had before on his inner explorations.
And I always remember there was something that he said. He said, the thing about darkness retreats is there's no breaks. There's no breaks between sessions, and there's no breaks on the vehicle. And that, I like a good challenge when we get down to it. And suddenly I started thinking about meditation as sort of an extreme sport. And that felt like, okay, like, well, I want to know what that experience is like. And so it started to stoke this inner fire in me. But I had also heard of this famed or legendary retreat experience called the 49-day darkness retreat. So that just came on my radar, and I had this felt sense of, like, I need to know what that's about.
Adam didn't start with a 49-day darkness retreat, because that would be crazy, even for a self-proclaimed night owl.
I did not start with that. I actually started with 7 days. I've done 5 of these retreats. Now I'm 112 days in total.
Once Adam got the bug to meditate in darkness, he started searching online for darkness retreat centers. He found one in Guatemala, run by a couple named Arpita and Arjuna.
There's this dome, this kind of earth dome, and it was made out of kind of earthen mud. It was like kind of like a mud hut, you know, like an eco dome. You know, it was a very simple space with a bunk bed and some shelves for your clothes and kind of a circular flat ground where you could move, as well as a toilet and a shower and a water tank. And there's a slot through the door where the food gets passed through, a two-sided slot so the light doesn't come through. And the food would come either 2 or 3 times a day, or sometimes no times a day if you're fasting, which I got into. And then a ring of the bell. And that's pretty much it. No one's watching. And that's really one of the great things that I have to say about darkness retreats is you get permission. You discover that you can have permission to be yourself in very different ways than you normally would.
The way it worked is that everything inside the hut was set up and ready, creating a sense of physical safety and what Adam calls psychological containment. Once he entered the hut, he had a little time to settle into the layout while he could still see.
It's kind of ceremonial in a way. The way it works is there's a candle that burns down, and so you have this dim light, and that's your chance to, you know, chant or do whatever practice by light that you want to do. And then when it's out, when the light burns out, then that's when the darkness begins. So that's how I got into this process. I remember being really tired, you know, like it was kind of a slog to get there, and landing in the space was like, ah, what a relief in some sense. But then also this kind of eerie, like, well, here we go kind of feeling.
While darkness retreats are a form of meditation retreat, where the intention is to experience deep reflection and spiritual growth, Adam approached these dark, solitary journeys with a different set of expectations for how he'd relate to the experience.
For all of my retreats, I've had this one precept, which was, I'm just not going to leave the dome. I'm not going to leave the space that I'm in. That's my only constraint with myself, because I just had this view that if I was kind of saying like, okay, Adam, you have to be a good meditator, I knew I was going to resist that. And so I give myself a very wide berth. And within that wide berth, then I trust that I'm going to incline myself over time towards the meditation, but I'm not being the enforcing teacher. And that has worked really well for me, because I think some people, you know, when we think about doing the kind of retreat I'm talking about, it sounds a lot like solitary confinement. And that feels very much like a punishment. And I was very clear with myself that the way that I'm going to thrive in this experience is to have a very generous attitude towards myself and to trust my process, rather than to be an imposing, dominant, kind of militant inner teacher to myself.
Meditation retreats can be challenging in and of themselves, with long stretches of silence and mostly only your own mind to keep you company. That becomes more pronounced and challenging in darkness retreats.
You know, I'd say the big difference is that normally in a light retreat, we have the visual field that is what we project onto, you know, what we project our mind onto. But in the darkness retreat, we have nothing to project onto. And that difference is tremendous, because now we're working more and more and more with the mind itself on some level, because there's nothing that the mind has to stick to. And so that is, it's like a whole nother beast in a way. And that difference, you do have to have some kind of stability in terms of learning how to work with whatever's inside of you, you know, whatever those challenging states are. Wherever your mind can go and would go, it probably will go. So when you get to that place, it's good to know, quote, what to do, to have different tools in your tool belt when you get to those places.
When Adam talks about challenging states, they can run the gamut, but often show up as an amplification of thoughts, emotions, and bodily sensations, such as deep anxiety, detachment, despair, rage, and even intense boredom.
I think in a light retreat, here's the difference. You can kind of get away with sort of maybe going to some of that stuff, but there's enough just kind of things that we can distract ourselves with so that we don't ever have to really touch that stuff. But in this process, there's really none of those guardrails, you know? So whatever the existential life themes or issues that are present for you in your life, or for me in my life, without fail, I would typically go to those places in each retreat in some way.
Well-established research has found that meditation affects the brain in many ways. Meditation in the darkness brings things to a whole other level.
One of the things that happens is that once the sensory deprivation starts to happen, the brain chemistry changes. And there is a typical successions of neurochemicals that start to be released in our system, particularly in the pineal gland. But first is the melatonin phase, or the sleep forever phase, which is really, really great. It felt like catching up on years of sleep.
After the melatonin, the pineal gland produces pinealin, which is linked to dreamlike visionary states while awake. Then comes DMT, or dimethyltryptamine, and DMT5.
DMT, it's considered to be the spirit molecule, and it's what's in ayahuasca. So there's NMDMT, and then there's also this other chemical, 5-MeO-DMT, which is sometimes referred to as the God molecule. And they're pretty big in the psychedelic community.
When meditators are in the dark for a long time and the succession of neurochemicals occurs, there's the potential for some people to experience intense visual phenomena and profound shifts in consciousness. This is what happened for Adam.
Things get very colorful. And it was literally mind-blowing to me to discover that this consciousness that is living me and breathing me had this very colorful, powerful display aspect that would come to life after, say, 7 days in the dark. Suddenly, this kind of display energy, you know, sometimes like fireworks. One I remember was like a Monet painting of like this whole scenes, very, very, very visual imagery that like I couldn't draw that, you know, that was just coming out of wherever that was. So that relationship, making your relationship with these psychedelic hallucinogenic displays that would happen when I would go into the deeper meditation, definitely wrought this felt sense of relationship with the dark that was very mysterious but also very palpable.
Adam described his first darkness retreat, the 7-day one, as magical. He had the sense that he'd found something profound that he'd been looking for.
It was an initiatory experience. You know, there was a real sense of discovering that I could be with myself without reading the books. You know, that's another thing. It's like all the theory goes out the window. It's like, what do you know? There's what you think you know, and then there's what you can apply within the context of not being able to see your own hand, about being present and trusting yourself in that place without any outer support. And that was a big confidence booster in me. But also these displays of light, and especially there's a kind of ecstatic energy that started to wake up in the core of my body and really also in the heart space, where I felt a really powerful, transcendent sense of gratitude. And that was totally life-changing. Yeah, I felt, I'd say I had an awakening of sorts in that retreat of feeling viscerally, discovering somatically that there's this level of the self that is pure, is natural, is home, is okay, is enough. A quality of wholeness, I would say, was like, okay, here, X marks the spot. Like, okay, this process right here, I've found for me the most transformational practice that I could find.
Naturally, after that first experience of X marks the spot, a retreat that engendered profound qualities of wholeness and transformation, Adam was game for another darkness retreat.
The second one was a totally different experience, you know, because the second one I did was 3 weeks. And 7 days, you can kind of wrap your mind around a week. But the thing about 21 days is, if you've never done this kind of thing before, there's no reference point you have for what 21 days feels like. You know, by day 8, it feels like eternity in some way. You've already gone through so much. I remember around day 8 was a real breaking point for me where I felt like, this is long. This is really long. And I can't sort of muscle my way through this process. That was a really big growth curve, learning curve edge for me, was this felt sense of I've got to adapt and evolve and discover new tools in this process. Because there's nowhere to go, right? You know, if you're taking the view, which I am, that I'm not going to leave, like that's not an option, then what becomes clear is thinking, just spending your day all day long thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking, that's also not a good option. Thinking is going to get really, really exhausting. It's not a good use of energy. This is a sport in the sense it's kind of like a long distance run. Okay, so as a runner, you want to know how to conserve your energy. And thinking is not a good use of one's energy. So once that becomes clear, it's a process of more and more and more being in the body. That is the most sustainable way to be in the retreat, is to learn how to be in the body. But in this retreat, I wouldn't say I had developed yet as much somatic embodied capacity.
In speaking about this second retreat at a talk he gave, Adam said that there was something about that experience that felt like dying.
Well, the second one was the biggest somatic or embodied transformation that I've probably ever experienced in my life. Because at the beginning of the process, I had all of this tension. I had a tremendous amount of tension. And I started to shake. My body started to have this shaking, releasing process. And this, I would go in these sessions where I would be kind of shaking for hours. Like hours. And I really would really go into, well, I'm learning how to release my body. My body is in this multi-day perpetual releasing process. And I really had to, in some sense, call on a higher power and to discover some kind of new resource within myself beyond just white knuckling it. And that kind of, there was a surrender in that for me. There was a real like, okay, I can't do this the way I've been doing it up till now. I really have to relax more and understand that I'm not in control here.
With a lack of control often comes fear, but that's not necessarily a problem.
You know, I have a very interesting relationship with fear, which is that there is a certain joyful energy within fear. There is a powerful aliveness. And that when we kind of get rid of the storyline about it, we are really connecting into this very alive place inside. And that, in some sense, is kind of the prerequisite almost to, I'd say, really thriving in the darkness experience, is to make a relationship with the energy of fear and other emotional states and start to relate to them as, sometimes sacred sounds a little bit precious, but something that's really worthwhile, that the juice, that's where the juice is, that's where the money is. And the more that I can be in my body and experience that energy very directly, then the more power I'm going to get to reconnect with in myself.
It was during this 3-week retreat that Adam first experienced the full neurochemical effects of existing in prolonged darkness.
Around day 12, day 13, day 14, 5-MeO-DMT started to release. And that was something that I'd never experienced in this way before. And suddenly I discovered, you know, there's the, for those who've watched The Matrix, you know, there's the way that, you know, Neo starts to dodge the bullets in this totally different way. It's kind of how I felt in myself of discovering suddenly I remember starting to move in these ways that I had never moved in my entire life. It was like my body itself was discovering that it had these other capacities that it didn't know it had, but suddenly there was this ecstatic state of profound confidence that came online that had a quality of ease and flow, and it felt like infinite capacity. It felt like a power that was much, much, much bigger than anything Adam had ever known up to that point in time. It was like every single day was the most transformational day of my entire life up to that point in time. There was literally, it felt like an exponential process of growth on a physical level, that something's rewiring at this moment in time that is changing my fundamental experience.
After four retreats spent in total darkness, Adam decided it was time for 49 days. He knew it wouldn't be easy.
In some sense, my philosophy for all these retreats was that each one of these experiences, if I make it through the whole experience, which I intend to do, it's going to cook me. It's going to transform me. Something's going to happen. I would call it the I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen process. My space holder, Arpito, would continuously say, know your edge. So I lived in Maui and I got into surfing in Maui, and for the 49-day experience, the imagery or the metaphor of big wave surfing came up for me. And I watched this surf series on a pro surfer named Kai Lenny, and he's talking about going into huge waves, you know, really, really big, 60-foot waves, you know, massive, massive waves. And he said this thing that just, like, really landed for me. He said, in the really, really big wave situations, the most important thing to remember is when it gets tough, knowing that it's going to get tough. And then when it does get tough, don't try to be a hero and rise to a higher level of yourself. Rather, fall back on your training. This sense of like, okay, I'm going through a marathon. I'm gonna hit patches where it's gonna get challenging, and that's to be expected. And to understand that I have this kind of tool for this situation and this kind of tool for this situation, but not to spin my wheels about it. And there's a kind of normalizing of everything that once I could just get oriented to where I'm at in this process and tell myself about where I'm at, then I could be with it and then it would transform.
When you hear about someone doing a meditation retreat, you usually picture them meditating. But Adam had to find a different structure for 49 days in total solitary darkness.
I did a lot of sleeping. You know, I love sleeping. And that is really one of the gifts of the darkness retreat, is no one is policing your sleeping. You can have as much of it as you want. I think that this kind of experience is one where I have learned to be more and more generous toward myself, rather than seeing it as like a punishment process. This kind of like, oh yeah, you can have another nap. You can have more. So I'd go through these phases of sleeping, eating, meditating, moving, chanting, and then more sleeping, you know.
Of course, there's only so much sleeping one can do. Adam had to figure out how to face the seemingly endless hours alone in the dark.
I like to play games. I'm a chess player, and there's a strategic aspect of my mind. And so the chess player or the game player, there is a reward process. And so for me, kind of just watching my breath for 49 days, it wasn't going to keep me involved. And also thinking about that much time, you know, it's 1176 hours. It's a long time. I knew that I had to get off the clock, off the thinking about the time thing. So what I did was I decided to do these goals of doing a certain amount of mantra practice. And the mantra was a way for me to stay in the game and to apply myself, to give myself a dedicated effort. You know, there's a goal-driven part of the brain or the self, and having that part engaged in a way helped me to let go in a deeper way. And I think that there's this kind of right effort between not having a goal and having a goal that both can be helpful at a certain point in time. And if I give myself a mini goal and then I notice, okay, after 2 weeks of doing this practice, after 100,000 mantras, wow, I can notice a certain kind of shift in myself. That shift fuels my inspiration, and that inspiration gains a kind of momentum.
Adam added in something else to the 49-day retreat, something that took it in a somewhat different direction from the Buddhist practices in which he'd been trained.
I would say in the beginning, maybe in the earlier retreats, I had more of this approach of, I'm just watching the mind. But in this retreat, what felt different about this one was, I'm here more than just as my, quote, spiritual self or my Buddhist self. I want to know who Adam is. And just watching is not going to cut it. In order for me to get to know myself, I really have to let Adam have a lot of room to talk about Adam, with Adam, to Adam, and through Adam. So more and more as I went on, I do a lot of conversation and dialogue. I went into this retreat in a challenging place within myself, and in particular, the energy of shame. You know, it was the kind of thing where the shame was never over a certain threshold, but it was more this persistent background energy of not feeling okay. Like, I really need this retreat. I really need a deep, it's more than a reset. I need a whole new frame for my life. And I worked hard. It was very much like a get low and get humble journey of getting into those shadowy aspects of myself, of my soul, of the places that I was, have been upset with myself or upset with choices I've made, and getting intimate. I think that's really the word. It's like what I started to do with these voice dialogues. It was a process of getting very intimate.
For Adam, the voice dialogues or conversations with himself became a profoundly healing aspect of the 49-day retreat.
I wanted to actually get into the expression. I wanted to get into the weeds, and I wanted to know what's really going on in here. What does Adam think about when Adam is thinking? Like, I have time. That was the thing, is I have a lot of time here. So I started to, you know, once these neurochemicals start kicking in, you're tripping on your own consciousness. You know, there's no substances, but you are definitely in an altered state. And from that altered state, at times I would be with, like, I'm the practitioner and I'm being my own therapist, and then I'm being the person, my own client, therapist-client relationship. And sometimes I'd be talking between two parts of the self. I would do a little bit of this into the microphone. I'll see if I could do a little bit, if that's all right. So what you're saying is that you really don't feel like going on this, you don't want to do this next session. You're tired, you're done for the day, and you'd like to go to sleep. I think that's a good idea. I just want to make sure that you, like, is there any hidden motivation? Are you afraid of anything right now? Because I'm just sensing that there might be a little tenderness in there. Yeah, there is, isn't there? Yeah, it's feeling really, really, it's feeling kind of crunchy, isn't it? Oh, you're feeling sad. And so I would start to elicit the other parts of the self, and I'd be having this kind of back and forth conversation, and it felt like one of the most loving things I've ever done for myself was to start to discover that there's this very kind part of me that could speak in a loving tone with the parts of me that have a hard time. And the surprising thing for me was really starting to feel a breaking out within myself, where I started to feel these new voices, these new energies coming in, and in that giving a lot more appreciation, acceptance, love, and compassion to my own experience.
So Adam found a new doorway to love and compassion in the darkness. And that deep inner discomfort, that too tight sweater sensation he spoke about, it turns out that doorway was just what it needed. But the process of self-discovery doesn't have an endpoint.
The hard thing is when you're done with the retreat, it's assumed that we have to put back on the personality. But there's a cumulative process that in some way I feel like you don't really lose. It's a tangible evolutionary arc. And so on that level, there's been a real evolution to how it feels in this bodysuit. You know, going back to the beginning of the conversation, living in a body that was extremely uncomfortable to now living in a body that I enjoy a lot. I enjoy living in this body. That's been totally life-changing for me. To feel joy and well-being as a basis of operations, you know, that was a main goal of my healing life. And so the darkness retreat has been probably the top out of any modality, really the most powerful catalyst for this process. And that's where I want to do about 10 more of these retreats. It changed my entire life.
You've been listening to Nocturne. I'm Vanessa Lowe. Nocturne is produced by me and was created by myself and Kent Sparling, who also created the theme music. Thank you to everyone who supports Nocturne on Patreon and PayPal. Extra special thanks to Hunter Longshore, who supports us on Patreon at the Happy Possum level, which is our highest level of support. Find out how you can support the show at nocturnepodcast.org/support. That's nocturnepodcast.org/support. That's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. Till next time, be well, and may you find something healing in the darkness.